Welcome to Bedtime Stories with Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Deborah, but some of my grandkids call me Nana Deb, so you can too. Hopefully you are all ready for bed. Snuggle up and let's read some stories before sleep. A Curious Menagerie by Karen Berger. This book is a lots of funny names about how animals and different things are in groups. On the front, there's a picture of a man that looks like he's the ringmaster in a circus. He has a long red coat, and the buttons are all different sizes, and a very tall black hat with a feather in it. He has a long curly mustache, too, and a cane. And hanging down from the word menagerie is a monkey that's wearing a red suit and a red hat. The monkey says to the ringmaster, "I'm curious, what do you call a group of geese?" And the man answers, "A group of geese is called a gaggle. A group of sheep is called a flock. A group of cows is called a herd." The monkey says, "Wow, I wonder what you would call a group of giraffes." Now on this page, there's a very tall building, and the artist has drawn the pictures using pieces of paper from other kinds of books and newspapers. So there's a picture of a very tall building made out of newspaper with lots of windows in it and lots of giraffes hanging out of the window. They're all different shades of beige and brown. Some of them have polka dots on them. Some of them have words on them. And guess what they're called, a group of them? A tower of giraffes. "So tall," says the monkey, "and a group of penguins?" Now the page shows six penguins marching across the snow. They all have on red hats with feathers in them too. And one of them is beating a big bass drum, and one of them is twirling a baton up in the air while the snow falls. Two of them are carrying a sign, and it says, "A parade of penguins." "Hooray!" says the monkeys. "Squirrels? What about several squirrels?" On this page, there are three squirrels running across. They're each holding a large acorn. There are tree trunks all around them that we can see. We can't see the top of the trees, but we can see the tree trunks, and we can see mushrooms growing in the forest. And on one of the trees, there's a sign, "A scurry of squirrels." The monkey cheers in, "A scurry of squirrels? Look at them go. How about a crowd of crows?" Paper on this page is dark blue with black outlining it. The black is the silhouette of trees and leaves and grass. And in the middle of the picture, there are gray shapes that are supposed to be gravestones in a graveyard. And on top of each gravestone is a black crow. One of them is holding a knife or a sword, maybe, that is dripping little drops of blood from the bottom of it. And one of the gravestones has the words, "A murder of crows." "Yikes!" cries out the monkey. "And raccoons?" Now the sky is really, really dark in this picture. Most of the page is black, but it has yellow and white stars all over it. And then there are other blue shapes that are supposed to be the tops of bushes or trees, or maybe they're just hills. It's kind of hard to tell. On top of each of these rounded shapes, there's a raccoon with either a magnifying glass or a spyglass or binoculars. And the man says to the monkey, "A gathering of raccoons is called a gaze of raccoons." And the word "a gaze of raccoons" is spelled out in star shapes on the page. "Hmm," the monkey says, "peekaboo, what do you call a mess of mice?" This page is all bright and cheery. The floor is a yellowish color, and there are several mice running across it. Two of them are each carrying, carrying a strawberry. It's huge. And then another mouse is carrying a cherry, but on top of her, there are balanced three more mice in polka-dotted outfits. And the one on the very top of the pile-up has some Swiss cheese cut in the shape of a pyramid. But right in the middle of the picture is a mouse in polka-dotted pants pushing a red wagon, and it has a big bunch of grapes on top of it. The man says, "A mischief of mice." The monkey says, "So sneaky. What do you call a group of elephants?" Now it is pale blue in this picture, and it looks like thought bubbles. There's one big bubble that has two elephants in it, and they each have very beautifully patterned cloths across their backs. They're kind of smiling, these elephants. But off to the side is another elephant in a different, smaller bubble. And this elephant looks kind of old, actually. He has dots connecting his small bubble to the big bubble. And in the big bubble, we see that those other elephants also have little dots connecting to a cloud that says, "A memory of elephants." "Don't forget," says the man. Monkey says, "How about owls?" We're really close to a tree branch in this picture. The background is pale yellow, but near the front of us, right up close to us, is a gray tree trunk and gray tree branch. It's huge and thick. And on it, there are five owls. Now, they're dressed very funny. They're dressed like judges in England are, with long wigs that are made out of white curls. And they all have buttons on their little shirts that they're wearing, and scarves that are white but made out of different fabrics around their neck. One of the owls at the end of the branch is holding a long piece of paper that's unrolled, and it says, "A Parliament of Owls." The man says, "A group of owls is called a Parliament of Owls." The monkey has his hands on his hips, and he questions, "Seriously? Leopards! What is the name of a lot of leopards?" The page now is green. There are three leopards that are leaping over a hurdle as you would do in a sports match out on a track. The leopards are made up of all different kinds of paper that's been torn from books and from other things that are striped. There are words, there are dots, but we know they're leopards. And they are called a leap of leopards. The monkey is so surprised. "Wee! And ferrets?" Now the page is a light green, but part of it is a long table that's made out of another piece of paper that looks like wood. There are two ferrets sitting at the table with notes in front of them, and there's one ferret dressed in a long dress that is torn out of pictures from another magazine with a little necklace made out of buttons. The ferret that's standing up is pointing with a stick to a board, and on it is a graph. That's something that you show how things change. And this graph is a series of red, jagged lines that are going up, 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 with an arrow at the top of them. And on the board are the words, "A Business of Ferrets." That's what the man says. A bunch of ferrets is called a business of ferrets. The monkey says, "What do you call lots of lizards?" The page is pale yellow. Across the page, there's a dark green branch with vines that are curling up and down. Over in one corner of the picture is a yellow sun with spiky lines coming out of it. And on another part of the back of the picture is a green-colored propeller airplane that's carrying a banner behind it. The lizards are mostly asleep on the branch. One of them is holding a glass with a red and white striped straw that he's sucking something out of. The banner behind the airplane says, "A Lounge of Lizards." And that's what the man says, too. The monkey exclaims, "Lazy lizards! How about flamingos?" This page is colorful and pink and red. There are 8 or 9 flamingos that are tap dancing on a stage in pink and red shoes. There is a red stage curtain all around the edges of the page. And the flamingos are oh so fancy. They have very tall wigs on their head, and some of them have boas, which are fluffy scarves around their necks. Some of them have fans that they're holding. There are decorations in their wigs and feathers in some of their wigs. But across those fans that they're holding are the words, "A flamboyance of flamingos." The man points with his stick and says the same thing, "A flamboyance of flamingos." "What a show!" cries out the monkey. "A group of jays." You guessed it, this page is blue. There are six birds, all different shades of blue, but they're blue jays. And they are celebrating. They have balloons that have words written on them. And there are streamers coming down from the ceiling and confetti of all different colors. Some of the birds are blowing party horns. On the balloons, it says, "A party of jays." More than one jay is called a party of jays, the man explains. And the monkey, who's now sitting up on the man's shoulder, says, "It sure is. How about an assembly of all different animals? What do you call that?" And now we see a dark blue page that has a black bridge, or a black gate, I should say, that would go across the front of a zoo. And on that gate, we can see mice and owls and crows, giraffes, raccoons, leopards, elephants, lizards. We see a ferret and flamingos and penguins and a squirrel. And they're all running around, and out of their heads are thought bubbles that say, "A menagerie." And that's the word that's written across this gate, too. The tall man takes off his hat and bows to us, and he says, "Well, that was fun." And the monkey says, "It was, but not as much fun as a barrel of monkeys." And so now we see a barrel, and there are a bunch of monkeys. All of them are holding bananas. Some of them have on funny hats. They're jumping out of the barrel and doing somersaults across the page. And then they explain to us what we just read about. Collective nouns are names for groups of people, animals, or objects. Words such as flock, herd, assembly, and array. Many originated in medieval England and were published in courtesy books, etiquette guides for young aristocrats. That's very, very rich people. Some of the collective nouns in this book first appeared in the Book of St. Albans in a section on hunting attributed to a woman named Dame Julian's Barnes and printed in England in 1486. That's over 600 years ago. It was one of the earliest books to record collective nouns. Many of the animals listed in the Book of St. Albans were beasts of the chase, but also included were group names for all sorts of animals and birds. These collective nouns were often playful or poetic references to the animal's behavior, characteristics, or appearance. A mischief of mice and a memory of elephants are two collective nouns that have no clear lineage. That means we don't know where they came from. Nevertheless, we were so smitten with them that we included them in this menagerie in this book. The end. Elizabeth's Doll by Stephanie Stuve Bodine, illustrated by Christy Hale. On the front page of this book is a little girl. I think maybe she's from Africa. Her hair is short and very curly, and she has beautiful brown skin, and she's wearing a kind of sundress and holding something wrapped up in a blanket. Elizabeth had a new baby brother named Obadiah. Elizabeth watched Mama take care of him, and she wanted to take care for her own baby. Now the Mama has on a striped blouse, and her hair is tied back with a red and white dotted scarf. She's smiling really big down at a little baby that's wrapped up in a colorful piece of fabric that's red with black and white flowers on it and yellow flowers. The baby has his hand in his mouth, and Elizabeth, who we saw on the very first page, is looking down as her mother holds the baby. Elizabeth didn't have a doll, so she went outside and picked up a stick. She tried to hug it, but it poked her, and she dropped it on the ground. Then Elizabeth picked up a rock. It was just the right size to hold, and it didn't poke Elizabeth when she hugged it. She kissed the rock and named it Eva. Now, next to Elizabeth is a brown chicken who has its eyes kind of wide open and wondering why this little girl is hugging a rock. When baby Obadiah had a bath, he splashed and got Mama wet. When Eva had a bath, she behaved very nicely and only splashed a little. In both of these pictures, the one where Obadiah is getting bathed, it's in a large bowl or basin on the ground, and the mama is kneeling on the ground next to him, trying to get him clean. In the other picture, there's another large bowl or basin, and here is Elizabeth very seriously holding the rock in the water. There isn't any splashing going on there. Mama fed Obadiah, and he gave a loud burp. Elizabeth fed Eva, but she was too polite to burp. Mama changed the cloth wrapped around Obadiah's bottom, and it was very messy. Elizabeth was very relieved to find that Eva's bottom was still clean. The mama has the little baby lying down on the ground while she cleans him off with very colorful cloth, holding his little feet up in the air. And Elizabeth is on the ground, too, with her Eva doll, the rock, and she's peeking underneath it to see that it's all clean under there. When Mama did her chores, she tied Obadiah onto her back with a bright cloth called a kanga. The house that they live in, it looks almost like a little log cabin. It's out on dry, flat ground, but in the distance there are mountains. And alongside the house is a clothesline with many different colorful kinds of fabric hanging on it. We see Mama pulling things out of the clothes basket, and we see the little baby on her back. When Elizabeth did her chores, she also tied Eva onto her back with a kanga. Mama had to help a little. Mama's tying a kanga scarf around the back of Elizabeth with the stone in it. Elizabeth went to visit her friend Rahili. Rahili laughed when she saw that Elizabeth had a rock for a doll. Now both girls are sitting on the ground, and Elizabeth is showing her friend how her rock is all wrapped up in a red and white patterned scarf or cloth. Rahili is laughing very hard, and she's holding onto her bare feet as she sits crisscross applesauce. She has on a pale blue shirt and a brown skirt. But Rahili didn't have a doll either, so when Elizabeth left, Rahili found her own rock and named it Malusi. And now we can see Rahili sitting on the ground. She doesn't have a cloth yet, but she's patting her rock that's going to be her doll. When Elizabeth got home, it was time for her to get water from the village well. She took Eva out of the kanga and laid her on the ground near some other rocks so she wouldn't be lonely. Then Elizabeth wrapped the kanga into a small bundle, put it on top of her head, and placed the water jug on top of the kanga. This is how she always carried water and other heavy things. We see a picture of Elizabeth and other girls walking along the dirt path down towards the well, and all of them are carrying their water jugs up on top of their heads. That looks kind of hard to do, actually. Elizabeth soon returned with the water and took it to her sister Pendo inside the cooking hut where all the family's meals were made. Then Elizabeth ran outside to get Eva, but Eva was gone. Elizabeth looked all around, but she couldn't find Eva. Oh my. First we see Elizabeth taking the water jug off of her kanga that's on her head and handing it over to her bigger sister who's cooking. On the ground, there's some fire on the ground, and there are little pans and bowls around it that she's cooking in. And then we see Elizabeth running outside looking so worried with her scarf in her hand and the pile of rocks. The chicken is there squawking around. Mama found a new rock and gave it to Elizabeth. Elizabeth shook her head when she saw it. The rock was just a rock. Pendo also brought Elizabeth a rock, but it wasn't Eva either. Oh, Elizabeth is sitting on the ground with her arms crossed across her chest, and she looks so sad. Elizabeth was very sad and sat quietly until it was time to help Pendo in the cooking hut. The sky is getting darker, the sun is going down in this picture, and against a brick wall, we see Elizabeth sitting crisscross applesauce with her elbows on her knees, and she's holding her face against her hands, looking very sad. The chicken is sitting right next to her, looking sad too. The family had rice for dinner every night, and it was Elizabeth's job to put the pot of rice on the fire pit, which was made of 3 large stones. Elizabeth sadly filled the pot with water and set it on the stones to boil. But one of the stones wasn't a stone at all. It was Eva. The fire is starting amidst the stones here, and we see Elizabeth sitting by the fire with the pot of water that she's just brought. And oh my, her face is so surprised, her mouth is wide open. Elizabeth called for Mama, and together they moved the pot of water and rolled Eva away from the fire. Although Eva was a bit dirty, she hadn't been hurt. And we can see Mama with her arms behind Elizabeth, holding onto the big cooking pot, and the fire going brightly where the stones were. Pendo ran outside to get a new stone for the fire pit, which is just how poor Eva had become lost. Eva sat quietly while Elizabeth cleaned her off and hugged her. At bedtime, Mama sang a lullaby and rocked Obedi in her arms until he fell asleep. Elizabeth sang a lullaby too, but she fell asleep before Eva did. And the mama is holding the little baby boy in her arms, singing away, the mama is, and the little girl is singing to her doll, the rock, Eva. Mama covered Elizabeth and Eva with a blanket. She smiled and thought that one day Elizabeth would make a fine mother. Eva thought so too. The last picture shows Mama leaning down, giving Elizabeth a kiss on the cheek. And around Elizabeth is a beautiful yellow blanket that has red and green plaid on it. And Elizabeth has her head right next to Eva, the rock, with her arms hugging it. The end. Today, we're going to read just one of the many wonderful stories from Stalking the Wild Dragonfly, Stories of Experiences in Nature by Nancy Rivest Green. Dragonfly. There is a drawing of a dragonfly done with black ink. It shows the very delicate wings with all the lines across it and its long back part. We stopped to scout Hans Rapid. Most people hiked up the side of the cliff to view the rapid, the biggest they had seen so far on the upper portion of the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon. I stayed near the river. A dragonfly drifts into view. Stopping 6 inches from my nose, it grabs a piece of waving grass with its tiny feet. I am astonished to be so close to a tethered dragonfly. It is a brilliant golden burnt orange, fluttering wings, a golden flicker, reminiscent of medieval Spanish filigree. Clinging to the swaying grass, its shoulders work rhythmically, slender body moving as counterbalance to the biplane wings. The copper-colored head swivels between the stalk of grass in front of it and me standing to the side of it. Its eyes beneath boxy eyelids check me out. This insect is sentient, something I have never considered about this life form. The spell breaks as it takes advantage of a gusty breeze to release from its tether and sail upriver, fluttering wings tiny against the massive canyon cliffs. What a gift to share that moment with a dragonfly. Since then, I have been thrilled time and again by the sight of dragonflies riding wave currents of air. Deep violet, pink, indigo blue, yellow, fiery red, emerald green, and copper wings shimmer in the summer sun as they dart past. Their favorite haunt is around water, but I have seen them deep in the forest away from any water source. Seeking the sun and wind for their mating ritual, they fly together in insect intercourse, all the more beautiful with two slender bodies and eight wings. Dragonflies have withstood the test of time. Fossils have been found of dragonfly-like insects dating back 325 million years. 125 million years later, dragonflies like the ones we see today flew over the backs of swamp-dwelling dinosaurs. These ancient ones had a 30-inch wingspan, similar to a common tern with a 16-inch body. Today's largest is the Hawaiian dragonfly with a 7-inch wingspan and 5-inch body, while today's smallest is 3/4 of an inch. The hind wings are broader than the front wings, with all four wings having the ability to move independently. Dragonflies have long been associated with water. Sometimes they lay their few dozen eggs scattered in wet mud or on floating vegetation in the water. Canyon streams deep in deserts have dragonflies skimming over standing water and perching along the edges of moving water. After a muddy beginning, an adult bursts forth from the water, shedding its final skin in its long series of moultings. When the air temperature is 65 to 70 degrees, they take to the air. Dragonfly annual cycles of life make them a source of spiritual contemplation for Native Americans. Petroglyphs of dragonflies from the Mogollon Mimbres show the insect as a guide of the soul to the other side. Hopi associate the dragonflies with life-giving springs, Navajo with pools of water. The Zuni believe dragonflies are the messengers between humans and the gods. Dragonflies are seen as symbols of regeneration, transformation, birth, and death because of their magical emergence from water. And this chapter ends with a picture, another drawing in black, of from a different view of a dragonfly, as if we were looking down from the top across its back with its wings spread out. That's all the time we have for today. We'll read more from this book another time. Thank you for listening to our bedtime stories. Sweet dreams.